This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Senate leadership announced that the upper chamber will vote on the repeal and the replace of Obamacare next week. The announcement comes as momentum builds for Congress to work through their summer recess. Will they? We'll talk with Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs a little later here on Washington Watch. And if you read and believe the headlines, the Trump administration is attempting to eliminate federal civil rights enforcement. The liberal majority on the Civil Rights Commission is helping with that narrative with their latest pronouncement. Roger Clegg, president and general counsel of the Center for Equal Opportunity, is here to explain. Also, a federal judge has ruled that a cross in Pensacola, Florida, has to come down after four atheists filed a lawsuit demanding the cross be torn down. FoxNews.com's Todd Starnes has the details on that later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. So you can find out more information there at TonyPerkins.com. All right, earlier this month, the House Freedom Caucus called on GOP leadership to cancel the August recess and focus on fulfilling campaign promises. The idea was dismissed at first, but now more House and Senate members are saying the break should be eliminated or shortened. Senator Steve Daines of Montana said, quote, Congress has no business taking a recess when the people's business remains unfinished. Well, joining me now is a member of the House Freedom Caucus, Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, who represents the 5th Congressional District. Andy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's good to be with you.
I know it's a little cooler in D.C., which is unusual, at least temperature-wise it's cooler, as Phoenix, man, 120 degrees out there, right?
Oh, it's balmy. It's just very, very comfortable. No, actually, it's very hot, but it's a dry heat.
That's right. That's what they say, a dry heat. Yeah.
Yes,
all right.
Sir.
Well, it's better than the political heat. Let's talk about that political heat, because the Freedom Caucus got out front saying, hey, we have not accomplished the things that we told the American people we were going to do. No reason for us to go home in August. That seems to be catching on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're still trying to see if something will happen on the health care issue. You know, we have an agenda that President Trump promised. We have an agenda that all of us campaigned on, and that agenda included working towards a balanced budget, doing tax reform, fighting for regulation easiness, you know, to reduce regulation. Mm-hmm. These are things that we promised we'd do. And why are we going to take 4 or 5 weeks off in August, knowing that the budget expires at the end of September?
Right.
We've got a debt ceiling argument to have. You know, so we've got lots of very important work to do, not much time to do it. Everyone knows that once you hit January, people go wobbly and aren't going to want to make hard decisions. So we need to get going and stay going right now.
Right. We've only got about 45 legislative days left in the fiscal year. So you're correct. And I've been around long enough to watch that the closer or the further we move from an election, the past election, people start thinking about the next election, and they do go a bit wobbly. But I want to say this, Andy, because I do credit is we want to give credit where credit is due. It's not as if nothing's been accomplished. We've actually accomplished some things. A lot more needs to be done. I absolutely agree with that, and I do believe that it would be best to work through at least part of the August break. I mean, we did see in the Senate the confirming of Justice Neil Gorsuch, which was a major accomplishment. Congress has rolled back 14 regulations from the Obama administration through the Congressional Review Act, which is the most that has ever been accomplished using that. So I don't want people to get the impression that nothing, that you guys aren't doing anything, but a lot more remains.
Right. No, you're exactly right, Tony. I mean, I don't ever want anybody to think that this is a do-nothing Congress, contrary to what our opponents would say. The things you've mentioned, those are great, but you know, we have 14 feet of regulations that are promulgated every year. We need to deal with that. We've got a $20 trillion national debt, and it's growing all the time. We need to get going on regular order budget process so we can keep a promise to the American public to whittle that debt down and get to a balanced budget. It's going to impact our grandkids. These are big things ahead. We've done some good things. We have some momentum. I know that you see all the smoke that's being created by some in the media, but the reality is we've done good things. We've got some momentum. Let's not pull the plug on that. Let's get going. And we can keep it going.
Congressman Biggs, let me ask you this. The announcement coming this morning that the Senate is scheduling, moving toward a vote next week, they're going to release a discussion copy of the Obamacare repeal and replace this week. Next week there'll be a vote. Does that change anything in your mind from a standpoint of not having to work in August?
No, not at all. I mean, I hope that happens, but don't forget that they're making changes, so you're going to end up having to conference that bill and then see, you know, what kind of votes you get on both sides after you conference. So
right.
There's still some meat on that bone that you have to take care of.
Well, that's a big issue because you had I don't have the list in front of me. If you signed a letter, there's 70 House members, conservative House members, pro-life members that signed a letter sent over to the Senate that essentially said that in the Senate plan, anything they do has to keep taxpayers out of the abortion business. If not, if that's changed, essentially it's dead on arrival when it comes back to the House.
Right. And that's a huge issue for people like me who, that's a litmus test issue for me is the life issue. And if we can't protect life, and I mean it should protect life for the entire 10 years of the program that they have there. If they can't do that, then there's no point in voting for that.
I cannot see that coming out of the House if the Senate does anything that, number one, removes the defunding of Planned Parenthood or removes the firewall between taxpayers and abortion. I just can't imagine that passing in the House.
I'm with you on that. I mean, because you're not going to get any Democrat votes, and then there's a significant group of people here who, I think, feel the same way I do. And so it would be very tough sledding to get a bill out of here that didn't protect life.
What other issues, you mentioned the debt ceiling. What's the timetable on the debt ceiling? And explain that a little bit to our listeners so they understand the importance of that.
Well, the debt ceiling is important because, let's put it in stark terms, we spend more money than we bring in revenue. And because we do that, we borrow money. And we have a limit or a cap on the amount of money we borrow. And that expires. And if you don't raise the cap, then you don't have any money coming in, and the government effectively will unplug until you decide to borrow more money to fund government.
Now, there was a little bit of a controversy associated with the last debt ceiling raise because it had a timetable but no cap on the amount.
Right.
Is that going to be approached differently this time?
Well, there's all kinds of ideas out there. One of my favorite ideas is there's a group of folks that want to prioritize so that our military personnel keep getting funded, that the Social Security, the seniors on Social Security, they will continue to be funded. And so you prioritize who gets funded during mm-hmm. that government shutdown, because there's money coming in and there's money that has to go out. But instead of just letting the executive branch determine how that goes, have the legislative branch set that agenda, set that prioritization of funding. And there's a group of people working on that as well. And
then, so what's the time frame? How quickly does Congress have to move to address that?
Well, really, if we're taking an August recess, it needs to be done by the end of July.
Yeah, so not much time.
Not much time.
And the point, and the way these deadlines are used, I've been around long enough, I've seen this, that so much bad stuff is passed almost exactly on Christmas Eve when everybody wants to go home, and there's that backstop, and so they pressure people into voting for this thing, or the August break. If you remove the August break, you work through it, you're less likely to get a bad deal.
Well, I think that's right, and that's the reason I think that they have these somewhat large breaks is because they know that it provides additional leverage.
Yep.
And working through August would yank that leverage away, or at least minimize that leverage. I mean, they're always leadership's always going to have leverage, and they need to have leverage. I know how that works, but by the same token, if we can remove some of that leverage, we might be able to get more rational discourse. We might be able to keep some momentum going and get some of these big programs done before the next big deadline, which is the end of September, on the budget. Because then you don't want to go into any more continuing resolutions. You really want to do a budget process.
And so is your anticipation, Congressman Biggs, that we're going to be back to the appropriations and cease with these continuing resolutions?
Well, my hope is that... You know, if the cynical side of me says that we're going to just keep on this merry-go-round of continuing resolutions, but the optimistic side of me says if we were to stay in August, because we want to get tax reform, and tax reform is hinged on this next budget as well, that if we can push forward, we might have a chance to do a good budget. I mean, and let's face it, if you could go through and debate this thing on here for 2 or 3 weeks in August, you'd have a good shot of actually putting a budget through here on time.
I almost think it's essential if you're going to, because I think without that time, I'm not sure you can get it done in the time that remains.
I agree with you 100%. 100%, yeah.
Congressman Andy Biggs, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Great to talk with you.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it. Thanks for what you do.
All right. Thank you. Stay cool, okay? All right, Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona represents the 5th District of Arizona. Arizona's got a lot of good congressmen. You know, Trent Franks from there. Some good folks out there in Arizona. All right. The website, TonyPerkins.com. I think it's – you got to watch this thing. This is going to be moving very quickly. Next week, there's going to be a vote. They're going to have what's called kind of a voterama. They'll have it's 20 hours of debate followed by rapid fire voterama, where parties can offer an unlimited number of amendments without much discussion. I mean, it moves very quickly and it goes through the night, and it's where a lot of bad stuff happens. And so we'll be watching that very closely. But as we get a chance. Probably by Thursday this week, they're supposed to release. And we've been working with the leadership on a number of these things. I feel pretty confident that the life issues are going to be addressed. But just in case, be standing by, because we're going to need you to weigh in. We got to be in this together, folks. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking about the headlines and the Commission on Civil Rights. The Commission on Civil Rights says the administration's proposed budget may cause a decrease in the enforcement of civil rights, creating some kind of crisis. Is it true? Well, we're going to talk about that when we come back. Roger Clegg, president and general counsel of the Center for Equal Opportunity, is here. Don't go away.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to be going back to Israel in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love to have you come with us. You know, one of my favorite places to go in Jerusalem is Gordon's Calvary, which is the place where they make the case, a very strong case, was where Jesus was executed. Then we'll also see the Garden Tomb, which is right next door to that, where also a very strong case can be made, was the tomb where Jesus was buried and where he rose from the dead. Well, that's just two of the places we'll see on one day in Jerusalem. We'd love to have you come with us. If you want the information we have available on the tour, go to the website twholyland.com, twholyland.com. For a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, 800 families, option 5.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Interfaith dialogue. Do you know what that is? In Grand Rapids, we have what is called the Kauffman Interfaith Institute, found on the campus of Grand Valley State University. Members of the Kauffman Interfaith Institute write a weekly column in the religion section of the Grand Rapids Press. Listen carefully, for it is deception. Quoting, according to the Quran, any person who is honest, does good deeds, and submits to God will be rewarded. One needn't have heard about Islam, know about the Quran, or be aware that God's name in Arabic is Allah. Submission to God is the true religion, whatever you call yourself. Unquote. Allah is not a real God and is certainly not the creator God, maker of heaven and earth. What is similarly operating in your area that has also been designed to undermine Christianity and biblical truth? Be alert, for the devil roams about, seeking whom he may devour. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique, 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. Remember, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights has been busy this past week. The commission, which remains controlled by Obama appointees, approved a comprehensive 2-year probe into the degree to which current budgets and staffing levels allow civil rights offices to perform their duties. Now, the commission also issued a statement expressing concern over the potential negative impact of the administration's budget proposal on civil rights enforcement by federal agencies. Now, keep in mind that the majority on this commission issued a report last fall where the then chairman of the commission, Martin Castro, said that religious freedom was, quote, code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, Christian supremacy, and any form of intolerance. So that's what we're dealing here with, and it appears the media is all too eager to give rise to the narrative that somehow the Trump administration is turning its back on civil rights. Well, this, with us now to sort through all this is Roger Clegg. He's the president and general counsel of the Center for Equal Opportunity. Roger, by the way, is a former deputy assistant attorney general in the Reagan and Bush administrations and held the second highest position in both the Civil Rights Division and in the Environment and Natural Resources Division. Roger, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks very much.
So some of the headlines are a little deceptive about what's going on over here.
Absolutely. You know, for starters, this kind of report that is a report on the federal government and how it's doing with respect to civil rights enforcement is completely routine.
I mean, that's why they're supposed to do that by
law. They're supposed to do this.
That's right.
And so the hype that the media is giving this is undeserved. And the calls for, you know, that this is being done because the Trump administration's budget on civil rights agencies is ensuring that the laws will not be enforced is simply not true. The budget is well in line with what it has been in the past. The proposals that have been made that the left doesn't like are simply, you know, moving one agency to another part or consolidating agencies to make them more efficient, things like that. The kind of of screaming that's being done on so-called these drastic budget cuts. In one instance, it's, you know, less than 1.6% of a very large budget in an agency where it was increased by much more than that just a few years ago. So there's nothing to it, and there's no evidence that the Trump administration is going to, you know, make it open season and allow racial discrimination. I will say that I hope that the Trump administration does make significant changes in the way that the civil rights laws are enforced. You know, I hope that they will not favor racial preferences the way the Obama administration did, so-called affirmative action. I hope that they will not require racial balancing in a way that's inefficient and unfair and irrational the way the Obama administration did. And I hope that they interpret the laws as they are written. For example, when Title IX says that you can't discriminate on the basis of sex, I hope that that's not interpreted to mean sexual orientation or gender identity, because that's not what the statute says. Mm-hmm. I hope the Trump administration will change all that. And I'll tell you something else, Tony. I think that the time has come to, if any civil rights agency is going to be gotten rid of, it should be the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights itself. This is an agency that was created decades ago when there was a need for it, because there weren't all these other civil rights agencies in the federal government. But now its work is completely duplicative of a lot of other work that's done. It's not needed. It's a waste of money, and it's become sort of a partisan creature that does no real good for anyone.
Well, Roger, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. So I'm just going to give you my perception. And there's a couple of things here. One is that the Civil Rights Commission, generally conservatives don't care that much about being on a commission like that, because its mission is often delving into liberal ideas and such. And so it is often dominated by liberals. What I see in this particular case is the commission, as you said, by law must report. I mean, this is what they do. But it appears that they are saying things, a little bit of commentary with the announcement of the investigation they're going to do, or the analysis, a little commentary they add to it to give the media something to say, feeding that media narrative, which is trying to, in my view, derail the Trump administration.
Well, I certainly agree with the second part of what you said. With respect to whether there are conservatives on the commission, it's interesting the way that it's made up. Right now, there are only two conservatives on it, Pete Kersenow and Gail Heriot, who are fantastic.
I've had Peter on the program before, so I know he's conservative.
Isn't he great?
He is good. I know there's conservatives, but conservatives don't pay as much attention to these issues as liberals do.
That is certainly true. And, of course, the reason that the commission now is stacked 6-2 is because four of the commissioners are appointed by the president, you know, to these staggered terms, so that if you've had a two-term president like President Obama, you know, those four are going to be liberals. And the other four, two are appointed by Democrats in Congress and two are appointed by Republicans in Congress. So, you know, that's where the 6-2 comes from. Mm. So you're right that what it's doing now is ridiculous, and it's certainly true that it's not just that I think conservatives are don't pay attention to these issues, but I think a lot of times they are afraid to speak out on them because they're afraid when the left plays the race card.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I do think that is true. Roger, we're out of time, up against a break, but I'm going to get you back on to talk more about this and kind of explain how all this works to our folks. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. I mean, got to know how this stuff works, folks. All right, got to know how it works. All right, coming up next, a judge in Pensacola says the cross has to go. Todd Starnes is next.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, there's a number of things impacting the market. Certainly, most of it is not having much of a negative effect, but it certainly would seem that market watchers are concerned about Eurozone breakup. I find that odd. I mean, it is likely that Brexit is going to continue to happen. Aside from that, and I did say way back when the Brexit vote happened, that it was going to be the beginning of the end. I'm trying to figure out, though, exactly how that is going to have a negative impact here on these markets, but some believe it might. There's also concerns over the unrest in the Middle East, and out of all the concerns from a market perspective, that's probably one of the most legitimate. Obviously, unrest in the Middle East could lead to a couple of things. Some are major interruptions in the flow of energy that would cause concerns throughout the Middle Eastern region and Asia would be one thing. Needless to say, the other thing would be somewhat of a hawkish tone that the Trump administration has and how they might react. There seems to be a legitimate, increasingly angry middle class that is frustrated by the sluggish pace of economic growth. That's a very legitimate concern, except any anger or concern ought to be about the slow pace in which the legislative process is doing anything about it. So maybe the middle class needs to be frustrated, but maybe refocus some of that frustration to Washington.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, a U.S. District Court judge recently ruled that a 34-foot cross on city property in Pensacola, Florida, is unconstitutional and has to go. The cross has occupied the space for about 75 years. Nobody had a problem until recently. The infamous Freedom From Religion Foundation teamed up with four atheists they found in Pensacola and filed suit. And the judge says, you got to take up the cross, but not in a good sense. Joining me now to talk about this is Todd Starnes. He wrote the story. You can find it at TonyPerkins.com. He's the host of Fox News and Commentary. Todd, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Great to be with you.
Well, you know, this fits right in line with, you know, what you've been writing about, the Deplorables Guide to Making America Great Again. I mean, the attack on the other side on our values and freedoms has not stopped.
No, it has not. As a matter of fact, I suspect we can make an argument it's actually gotten worse. And there are a couple of lessons for us to learn in this story from Pensacola. First, it's important to understand once again that lower court judges matter. Judge Roger Vinson, the federal judge in this case, was appointed to the bench not by Barack Obama or Bill Clinton, but by Ronald Reagan. So that's why it's so important for us to pay attention to who the presidents nominate to these lower courts, because we end up getting these absurd rulings. And what I find interesting here, Tony, is that Judge Vinson, and I was reading his conclusion, it seems to me that the judge is sympathetic with the city here in this case,
yeah,
and even wrote so much in his ruling that the historical record indicates the Founding Fathers did not intend for the Establishment Clause to ban crosses from public property. So my question is, if in fact that is correct, then why in the world did he rule the way he ruled?
I came to the same conclusion, because this judge does not appear to be a liberal. He actually appears to be a conservative. But what he said, in fact, you made point, he made reference to the historical record, which indicates that the founders did not intend for the Establishment Clause to ban crosses and religious symbols from public property. But he goes on to talk about a case in Georgia, in I believe that's where it was, where
that's right, Rabun County.
And he said because the judge there ruled that the cross had to come down, he was bound by the same decision. Now, if a decision is wrong, I have a hard time understanding why you got to be bound by it.
Tony, I do too. And the judge wrote this as if he was hoping, almost begging that it be appealed. And he wrote in the final paragraph of his conclusion that he hoped that it would be appealed. But again, I think this goes back to this idea that the secular humanist and the atheist are waging an all-out assault on the Christian faith. And they're doing whatever they can to remove any Christian symbol from the public view. And that seems to be the case here. The city of Pensacola now has 30 days to remove that cross. He also awarded the four atheists who filed the lawsuit damages in the amount of $1. That amounts to a quarter apiece, Tony.
Well, maybe they can make a phone call then. What is the city going to do? Are they going to appeal the decision?
Not sure yet. I hope they do. Typically cities will use organizations like First Liberty Institute or Alliance Defending Freedom. In this case, they used, I believe, a local law firm. So I'm not quite sure what their plan of action is. I hope they do appeal it. But again, it's absurd because, the judge was basing his decision on really questionable grounds. But we'll see what happens here. But it's one of those cases where people need to pay attention because sooner or later we're going to have to ask some very pointed questions. For example, are they going? Is California going to have to rename Los Angeles and San Francisco, or are they going to have to chisel the Ten Commandments off the front doors of the Supreme Court building?
Don't give them any ideas. I mean, there are some that want to do it. I mean, you've had Michael Newdow, I think he filed suit to have In God We Trust taken off the money. These guys will not stop. They are relentless, and if they can think of it, I mean, they are going to try to do it.
And honestly, Tony, an atheist in good standing would not be caught dead with American currency in their pocket. So,
well, I'll take it.
Here's a quarter.
Or they could use it. They could use it to buy the Deplorables Guide to Making America Great Again. That way, they won't have to carry it around.
More quarters, but that would be great.
All right, Todd Starnes, always great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Tony.
And keep us posted on this, by the way. If you find out that they're going to fight, let us know because we want to help them. Well, I'll have to get back in touch with Todd. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to talk to you. This is, another example of how relentless those that are, opponents of religious freedom, of the cross, and these symbols that remind them of the fact that we are fallen human beings and God's intervention in this world to provide salvation came through His Son who died on that cross. Now, this is an issue of us being able to proclaim the gospel. Stood for 75 years, and only now is it being removed because it's unconstitutional. All right, don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
1MillionDads.com is where men can learn and grow together as men of the cross. Close families and even national revival begin at home with strong fathers in the faith.
I really like how the website provides so many articles. They're all just dead on to help me as a father.
Go to the website, read the articles. You're not alone. 1MillionDads.com. Lead or others will.
A boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is a highlight of our tour of the Holy Land when we go on the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. A special time to be on the very water where Jesus walked, where he spent time with his disciples. And you know, in fact, you're the place where Jesus was. So many sights we're going to see in the Holy Land that are just like that. We know Jesus was here. The trip is in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love for you to come with us. So many places we're going to see you've read about since you were a child. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, extension 5.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. 866-372-7234. Here's the question. I mean, I wrestle with this, okay? Are you puzzled on how something can be constitutional for decades, even centuries? And now it is somehow unconstitutional. Did the Constitution change? No. I mean, last time I looked, when I went to the National Archives, nothing's changed. So what's happening here? Are you puzzled, like me, on how something can be constitutional for decades? I mean, this cross stood for 75 years, three quarters of a century. And now it has to come down in 30 days because it's unconstitutional. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. So I think we have taken too many of our freedoms for granted. And we don't like conflict. It's interesting. I was actually reading that this morning in my devotional in Acts chapter 13, where Paul, still called Saul, was taking the gospel to a government official, proconsul, and there's this antagonist, a sorcerer who was basically blocking it and everything. And man, Paul just ripped into him, called him son of the devil and all kinds of other things. And we hear, well, you know, we don't want conflict. Look, I don't like conflict either, but some things are worth defending. The truth is worth defending. In fact, that's our job, is to both live and defend the truth. To live the truth, meaning internally, that we live the truth, that we live according to the truth. And there is truth, okay, folks? There's truth. And I know most of you get that. Transcendent, unchanging truth. And we need to live by it. And then we need to carry that truth. That's a part of the Great Commission, okay? The Great Commission was not just about baptizing people and bringing them into the church. That's, it said, go ye therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, and teaching them all things that I have taught you. That's the truth. And we have to defend it. We have to stand for it. And sometimes that means that there will be confrontations. Now, we shouldn't be confrontational in our demeanor, because this is not about simply winning an argument. As you often have heard me say, if you listen frequently, we need to speak the truth out of a redemptive heart. It's what Ephesians 4 says, it, speak the truth in love. Our goal for speaking the truth, our goal for defending the truth, our goal for defending the cross, yes, it's worth defending. Our reason for doing that is so that others might come to know the truth. You see, what happens, these things, in and of themselves, they may not seem like a big deal. But when you, eventually the landscape will be devoid of any references, symbols of Christianity in our country. And subsequent generations will have nothing to remind them of the fact that America is a Christian nation. In fact, today at least, because they're not taught this in our schools, at least they might see this and say, what's that there for? And someone might be able to explain to them why. And that as a nation, we have long recognized that our success, protection, security is dependent upon God. You go back and look in the 1950s when we changed the motto to In God We Trust. The pledge was changed. All of those things. It was to send a clear message that we were different than the nation that we were locked into this Cold War with Russia, that we were different than. We were not an atheistic country, but we depended upon God. That's the history. That's the history. That's the truth. Go back and read it. And now they're wanting to eradicate all those things. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Georgia where Francis is on the line. Francis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Nice to be on. You know, to a certain extent, it's sad, but the reality is you couldn't defend a cross, a physical cross, on being on any property from the Bible. There's no command to put a cross. I think the biggest problem we have, we don't have Christians living the cross. But if we have enough Christians living the Christian life, then we would stand out as an example to this nation. It's more, you know, living a Christian life is more important than a cross on a piece of property. It's more important than the Ten Commandments on a building. I think we need to focus more on Christians living the Christian life than a piece of wood or a piece of stone or concrete on a property.
Francis, I would agree with you from a standpoint of I think that's half the equation. I think we have to do both. I think the culture around reflects what we place, what we think is a priority. And I absolutely agree with you from a standpoint of you don't change a nation by erecting monuments, but you erect monuments that reflect the heart of a nation. I mean, you go back to the Old Testament when they would stack up the stones as a reminder, as a monument to subsequent generations of what God had done. There's a reason we have those crosses up there. You go out to San Diego, and there was a cross out there after World War I that was placed out there. You've got all across the nation, you've had these battles in the last several years about crosses that were placed up, decades ago as a representation of a nation that acknowledged its dependence upon God. Now, has that changed? I think it has in many ways. I think we have, as you said, I think we've stopped living it as we should. But that doesn't mean that we should turn away from both. I think we need to turn back to God. And that's why I said just a few moments ago, we need to live it. We need to live the truth. It begins with us individually in our families. But we shouldn't have to stop at the threshold of our home. And we're talking about historical sites. Not talking about erecting new ones. I mean, that's a whole other topic. We're talking about eliminating our history as who we are as a nation, tearing down those representations of America's expression of its devotion and dependence upon God. And I, quite frankly, I think those are things that if they weren't unconstitutional then, how do they find them unconstitutional now? Because the Constitution hasn't changed. Francis, thanks for listening. Appreciate you calling in. Let's go to Mississippi where Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. This is not very complicated at all. We have gotten so far removed from the ideological underpinnings of the Declaration. The Declaration specific, this is the Declaration's language, not mine. Prudence indeed will dictate that government long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, nor abolish the forms to which they're accustomed. That's not our language. Christian conservatives don't speak from that frame of reference. We are so ill-acquainted with those foundations, they serve us no purpose. And like the scripture, I think it's in Psalms, that says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And if we are so illiterate to what's right under our nose, we ignore the preamble of the Constitution and treat it like a potted plant. And there you have in the first sentence of the rule book a protective measure for the unborn of securing the blessings of liberty to posterity, and not to mention establishing justice to them too. But we don't articulate that. So we're right on course. We're disoriented because we don't know how to use the navigation aids that are right there at our disposal. Not complicated.
Yeah, well said, Jim. I think you're right. The documents are there. The documents hadn't changed. What has changed is we don't know them. They're not taught in school. Kids don't read them. They're not taught in college. And we hear, you know, more of this regurgitation of what the documents said from liberal sources. We need to go back to teaching what the Constitution, what the Declaration says. It is baffling to me how Americans will sit by and say, okay, that was there for 100 years and now all of a sudden it's unconstitutional. Why was it not unconstitutional 100 years ago when they built it? Or 50 years ago? The Constitution hasn't changed. It's still the same. We still have the same freedoms. And because the citizens erected a monument, in this case a cross, or it could be the Ten Commandments, as an expression of their devotion and dependence and appreciation to God 50 years ago, 75 years ago, that all of a sudden now that is an unconstitutional expression. I mean, It doesn't add up unless we don't know what those documents said, as Jim pointed out. All right, let's go to Texas where Bonnie is on the line. Bonnie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Enjoy your show. Listen, actually all of these unconstitutional happenings and various things are all planned. There is a higher organization in the world that works today, and when it was organized decades ago, its goal was to take down the constitutions and the sovereignty of all national entities. The name of that organization is the Council on Foreign Relations. Many of the things that are seeded into our culture and our nation today come from that very powerful organization. CFR works every day in the world.
There's a lot of counter forces at work, and so I don't dispute that. But you cannot, if we were equipped with the truth and willing to stand up and defend the truth, they would not prevail. And it goes back to what Jim was saying, that, you know, we don't when someone tells us that this is unconstitutional, but we don't know what the Constitution says, how can we push back? I mean, first, it's just, again, a pure logic. It was legal 75 years ago. It wasn't unconstitutional then. It wasn't unconstitutional 50 years ago. Why is it unconstitutional today? The Constitution hasn't changed. But if you know the Constitution, what the Constitution says, you know, establishing a cross, or putting a cross up, is not establishing a religion. We've had all of these things. We've kind of really had it turned upside down when it comes to the First Amendment. Not only the government's not establishing, well, they are establishing a religion, humanism. But we need an informed, that's part of why Washington Watch is here, to inform and engage, you know, folks across this country. And I tell you what, we're coming up on a great time, 4th of July. Can't think of a better time to take a moment and, you know, read some of the Declaration to your children. Read the whole thing to your children, grandchildren. Now, start taking responsibility for teaching your kids what this country is about. All right, I'm going to try to work in one more call here before we run out of time. Let's go to Texas where Rudy is on the line. Rudy, welcome to Washington Watch. 30 seconds. Rudy, go ahead.
Well, around 1905, my grandmother was begging for a hobble skirt. And great-grandma said no, no, no. And grandma persisted. She got a hobble skirt. And then she went to get on the streetcar, and she had lifted up above her knees. And it just so embarrassed her that she never wanted to wear it again. And in my lifetime, I have seen multiple contractions, compromises of things like long hair on guys and short hair on girls, and the dresses are coming shorter and shorter, and finally women wearing pants and so forth. We've compromised on one thing after another, and now...
Well, we'll get... We may save that for another day, Rudy. I mean, I understand what you're saying culturally, where things have changed. Clearly, the modesty issue. We've moved away from the benchmark of truth. And, you know, I talked about reading the Declaration to your kids. Well, I hope each and every day you are first yourself in the Word of God. That is the truth. That is transcendent truth. That is the acid test of truth. It is truth itself. And that you're reading it to your children, your grandchildren, if your children are grown. But be in the Word. I mean, it starts there. And that's where the founders understood, and that's what that was really the foundation for this country. We'll talk more about that as we move closer to the 4th of July, because I think this is a very, very important topic. Well, if you missed anything on your way home, go to TonyPerkins.com, catch it later. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, where he said in Ephesians 6, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed and you've taken a stand for the truth, no matter what comes your way, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.